As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to Pod on the Tyne, your go-to Newcastle United podcast, brought to you by The Athletic. Coming up on this week's show. Newcastle seal 1-0 victory over Crystal Palace with Mitchell own goal. Hang on, no, sorry, there's a check coming in. Newcastle were in fact held to a goalless draw on a woeful weekend for VAR. And George was back at Kingston Park for another women's game, but that didn't exactly go to plan either. Yes, hello, welcome to Pod on the Tyne, your go-to Newcastle United podcast from The Athletic. My name's Taylor Payne, and I am joined by Chris Woff, and the latest to throw his name into the hat for the new James Bond role, Mr. George Culkin. How the devil are you, George? Are you all right? Do you have a license to kill?
Perhaps I've lost my sex appeal.
Yes, yes indeed, George. You were at the women's game, weren't you? And somebody saw you and described you on Twitter. And how did they describe you, George?
I just really wouldn't like to say, Taylor. I mean, I'm far too modest. Really, but I was described as James Bond-esque, I believe. It's just very, very rare that people get stuff like that so completely and utterly right. So I would like to give a shout out to Toon Lowdown. That's Tom. George Culkin walked past me at the ladies' game today. What a slender, handsome man. James Bond vibes. I didn't bother him naturally.
Outstanding.
Yeah. So
did he have a Labrador with a high vis jacket on with him?
I mean, I wouldn't like to say, Taylor. Let's just move on at this point. And there's going to be a lot of anger. There's going to be a lot of anger on this show, I feel. So let's just start off with a nice little interlude.
A bit of joviality to start with. Chris Woff, how the devil are you, sir? Are you all right?
I'm angry as well. I mean, I'm angry at the world, but I'm angry at George as well. And I'll tell you why I'm angry at George. And I've held off saying this until now. It's been building up over the course of the last few weeks. But on match day at St James's Park, I've been bringing different types of sweets before the game for us to share. And George has done so once and brought some sweets, and he thought that was fine, you know. Every single time I bring sweets or a snack of some form, he whinges about whatever it is, having brought nothing of his own to the party. So at the weekend, I went to M&S, you know, and I got Percy Pig's Fizzy Tails, and I also got...
Things are going well.
And I also got wine gums, and he still whinged about what I brought. It's like, what do you want? What do you want, George Culkin? So you stop whinging and bring your own sweets next time.
I just want a martini. I want a vodka martini, Chris. How are you, Taylor, anyway? Come on, how are you?
I'm fucking furious, George. Absolutely fucking livid.
Yeah, we've got to
the
do
laughter
it.
The laughter is basically masking the absolute rage that is boiling inside of me today. I'm telling you. Oh, my God. Yeah, shall we get started with this? Because I feel like it's going to be a heavy one, this one, and we're going to have to talk about it eventually. Okay, Newcastle held to a goalless draw at home to Crystal Palace, and that in itself isn't such a weird thing, but we are denied a perfectly good goal down to the video assistant referee, and yet again, we are seeing these decisions happen in the Premier League at the top level of football, and it's just not good enough, is it?
It isn't. I mean, it was a very strange moment within the stadium when it happened, because the goal went in and I sort of tweeted that there was a goal, and then there was almost silence as if nobody knew what was going on. I thought it was rather odd that sort of 3-4 seconds after the goal, and only Castle players, nobody really celebrated instantly. And obviously that's because there was an incident in the pitch, and I think they were worried about Joe Willock and also Vincent Guide. Obviously the two of them seemed to go down with head injuries. And then the goal was initially given, and then the referee is told to go across to the screen to look at the incident, and he disallows the goal on the basis, seemingly, that Willock fouls Guider. Now, seemingly, either they didn't have the angles or they didn't review the fact that Willock looked to receive a little bit of a nudge in the back from Tyler Mitchell, which Howe was adamant took his momentum into the player. And I'd agree with that, because it was obviously Mitchell who ended up putting the ball in the back of the net. Anyway, it was an own goal in that sense. And so they've disallowed it on the basis that Joe Willock has fouled Vincent Guider. Now, I think that's completely wrong. I think the goal should stand. I'm not as strong on the opinion as some people are that it should definitely be a penalty. I don't think that the nudge necessarily warrants a penalty of its own accord, but I don't think the goal should be disallowed. I just don't understand how the goal is disallowed. I think it was a ridiculous decision. And yes, I can understand why. I mean, I am not one of the conspiracy theorists myself, but I know that a lot of people are starting to join in that club. I don't think it was a conspiracy theory. I just think it was terrible officiating.
Well, yeah, I mean, if we're talking about conspiracy, we have to go back a week to Wolves, where Wolves had a goal ruled out correctly for a push on Ryan Fraser, if we remember that. Now, that was a clear and obvious error, and Newcastle, I don't want to use the word benefited from it, because it was just the right decision. So there's no conspiracy here. There are two things that make me really annoyed. I wasn't massively annoyed at the time. I watched the game. I know you were in level 7. Taylor, I was in the Gallagate corner. I just wanted to watch the game there for a change. I had no fucking clue what was going on. I had no idea. Yeah. And so we're still, and obviously from that position, you can't see the screen. And, you know, we're told that there's a check going on. But I can't stand that moment where the people who've paid a shit ton of money to get to see that game have no idea about what's going on in the game, about why something has been disallowed or not disallowed, you know, blah, blah, blah. That's my first thought. The second thought is, you know, we keep hearing that it's not the VAR that's the problem, it's the people who are implementing it that's the problem. I don't know if I agree with that, because you've got this, if all VAR and TV does and goal line technology does is help in matters of fact, I'm fine with that. You know, it's great. Goal line technology, that's fine. That's a matter of fact. If a ball crosses the line, that's a fact. Offside, theoretically, is a fact, because, you know, it just is. Whereas fouls, they're matters of interpretation. Most of football is interpretation. And I don't care about referees making mistakes. I expect it. Some of the time I welcome it, because it adds to the gaiety of the match. Alexander Isak arguably made the biggest mistake of the game on Saturday. I make a mistake in absolutely every single thing that I write and do. Managers make mistakes in terms of selection. I don't mind mistakes. I expect referees to make mistakes when the game is so free-flowing and quick. What I object to is those subjective decisions that are taken in a split second, then being given to somebody else to make a subjective decision, getting it wrong. And then in the case on Saturday, it then going back to the referee, who then makes another subjective decision and gets it wrong. Albeit that, because I would argue, because he wasn't showed the right angle of the goal, the disallowed goal. It's fucking nonsense. Football is subjective. A lot of it is subjective. What you don't need to do is take away the referee's authority and give it to somebody else who then still gets it wrong. That's what I hate about the system. It's giving more people more opportunities to get something wrong, and that spoils it. Spoils the flow of the match. Again, what I'm most angry about is talking about VAR, not VAR in the first place. But we talk about it because it's being used in such a fucking idiotic way.
Yeah, yeah. I'm still trying to put this all together in my head because I'm still absolutely livid about the whole thing. You're right. I was up in level 7 on the balcony when it happened, and I saw Joe Willock get sort of bundled onto the floor. My first reaction was that there was a foul on Willock, but I didn't really see it that clearly. Then I realised the ball's gone in the net, so obviously we celebrate as if it's a goal. But then that little lull straight afterwards where, and this is what VAR has done to football and done to football fans. It makes you doubt the game and it makes you suddenly think, hang on a minute, maybe there's something wrong here. It robs you of that moment. And instead of you being able to celebrate a goal with the emotion and the passion of which you normally would, that gets taken away from you. Now, I'm sorry, but I'm a football fan, and if those moments are taken away from me, then there's fucking no point in going to a game of football anymore, because you go for those moments. That's what you want. The goal, I know there's other incidents this weekend that have had a lot of publicity. The goal by McAllister for Brighton, one of the best goals I've ever seen in my life. If you'd been in the stadium that day and you'd had that goal taken away from you, you would be absolutely devastated, because you don't get moments like that very often as a fan. Now, the problem I have with VAR is that it's a gift that's been given to the officials to help them. And we've said for years that these officials needed help because they couldn't do it on their own. Now, they've been given this gift and they don't know how to use it properly. You've got somebody sitting in a box somewhere making decisions for a man who's 10, 15 yards away from the ball. That to me is mental. It is absolutely ridiculous. Now, how they can look at that replay and not give anything apart from either an own goal or a foul on Joe Willock is beyond me. And I'm absolutely fucking sick of it now, because it's spoiling the game. It's spoiling the game of football that we love, because they're making decisions. And to not give the ref all of the angles, I don't care if it takes an extra 30 seconds. Show him what he needs to see to be able to come to a decision. Because if you don't give him the angles, how is he supposed to make a decision? You can't just show something from one angle and go, there you go, that's all you've got. If we've got cameras all over the stadium now, which we have, and you can see an incident from 5, 6 different angles, make them available to the ref. If it needs to be split-screen technology, if it needs to be looked at on 2 or 3 monitors, show him the fucking angles and give him the best chance to make the decision. Because we're not helping refs with
so,
this.
So here's what I would say, right? And maybe this is a bit controversial. But if what had happened on Saturday, the referee sees that in real time, maybe there's a few players in the way, maybe there's a player in the way of the assistant, the linesman, and all the referee sees is Willock clattering into the goalkeeper, and he rules that out as a goal straight away. I don't mind. I mean, I would have been annoyed if I see the replays a bit later on.
Yeah.
It's not the mistake that angers me. It's the mistake on top of another mistake, and giving other people opportunities to make mistakes. It's pointless. That's not what VAR is for. It's supposed to be clear and obvious, and it's supposed to. It should be quick. It should be instantaneous. Another thing that I think. I was at the women's game yesterday, as you said at the top, and I was Steve Harper was there, and we were chatting about it. He was talking about, this is a slightly separate issue, but he was talking about putting time limits on VAR decisions. Because if you can't sort out, you know, something like that within 90 seconds, for example, that might not be the best example. But if you can't sort out something like this in 90 seconds, it's not clear and obvious. And it's just gone so far away from what it should have been doing in the first place. It is now re-refereeing games, and that's not what it was supposed to do. It was supposed to help referees' authorities, and it's actually taking it away from them.
It is. I find the whole thing completely tedious now. I'm so bored of it, especially this last 2 weeks. It's sucking the joy out of the game, Chris, and it's making fans doubt themselves now when they go at the match. You can't even celebrate a goal now. It's getting absolutely ridiculous.
It is. I mean, one thing I would say after this match is I think that I think that actually the controversy helped Newcastle. I think they improved once there was that incident. Now I know there should have been a head, but I actually
doesn't,
think... Actually,
doesn't,
no,
doesn't do
no,
anything
no,
for,
no,
the, it, for the game,
it,
does it?
It doesn't do anything.
3 points.
It doesn't do anything for the game. But also, I also think it's allowed people to overlook what was a game Newcastle should have won anyway. Now, I know they're two completely separate incidents, but if we just focus on VAR, Newcastle should have won the game.
Oh, yeah.
Newcastle should have won the game regardless.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't. And that was through their own profligate finishing. That was through poor decision-making of their own accord. It was through some good goalkeeping. But I do think that we can't just say that Newcastle didn't win on Saturday because of that. Yes, they probably would have won. If that goal stands, I think they probably would have won. But that isn't the only reason they didn't win on Saturday. That is probably the reason why they got a point last weekend as well. So, as George said, I'm not saying it's right that it's balancing out that you're getting poor decisions or good decisions here and there each week, but I don't think we can just talk about only that from Saturday. That wasn't the only reason Newcastle didn't win that game.
Oh, no. That's totally fair.
No, of course, that's totally fair.
And I've always thought that. I mean, I tend to find those like individual moments in games very, very tedious when we're talking about a push or we're talking about a handball, we're talking about that sort of stuff. I would prefer to take a step back and sort of look at the picture. And Chris is totally right. Newcastle had more than enough chances to win that game and to win it comfortably, particularly in the first half. Having said that, I think when something is so stupid as that incident was, I think it's fair that we look at it, and I think it's fair that we get angry about it, because, you know, for me, the bigger picture about that is that it's spoiling football. It's spoiling football for us as Newcastle fans. It's spoiling, but it's also spoiling it for everybody. There'll be times when Newcastle are on the, you know, are on the right end of a bad decision, but that's not, you know, that's not a good thing.
Mm.
And it shouldn't be the first thing that we're talking about. It should be, you know, we shouldn't be talking about it at all, because it's supposed to be there to correct mistakes, and it's making more mistakes. And, you know, it's just so annoying.
It really is. It really is. I'm a bit unsure about what Patrick Vieira was watching, mind, with his post-match comments.
It's just nonsense. It's just managers.
I know there's a win at all costs sort of attitude towards these things now, and you don't want to be seen to be, making some kind of statement which would have taken your team's points away or whatever. But he's come out and said afterwards that he thought it was a clear foul. Now, I'm sorry, but what are you watching?
I mean,
what are you watching?
I mean, it is a foul, but there's two fouls.
It's a foul on Willock.
Yes, and I agree it is a foul on Willock, but I also think Willock...
It's not a foul anywhere else on the pitch if you push somebody into another player, is it?
Let me finish what I'm going to say. I do think it's a foul on Willock, but I also think it's a minor nudge, and I do think Willock's momentum is taking him forward regardless. So I also...
It's not a minor nudge. How came out
and said after the game that changes Willock's momentum or takes him into the goalkeeper because of that? The first two angles, when you look from one side, you can't even see that there is a nudge. I agree it's a foul on Willock, but I also think Willock's momentum is taking him towards Gaeta anyway. I think it's a goal. Newcastle should have had the goal. It shouldn't have been disallowed. But I don't think it should have been a penalty if it got disallowed. And I also don't think it wasn't like he went and absolutely shoved him completely and so he had no option but to go into Gaeta. He didn't have any option
to get out the way of Gaeta because he's been pushed. And he's pushed.
He's pushed in midair.
Yeah,
he's pushed firmly. I know what you're saying.
I don't think it's a push that takes you absolutely miles. I don't think it's one of those.
He couldn't have got out the way. He could not have got out the way. Moving at that speed and having been pushed like that, there's no way that he could have avoided the goalkeeper. Absolutely no way. And it doesn't.
I can understand.
In any case, the force of it doesn't matter. It's a foul. It's a foul in the box. It's a penalty. I don't think it's a penalty.
I think it's a goal, but I don't think it's a
penalty.
Penalty.
It's a penalty all day long.
I don't think it's a penalty.
Chris, if he doesn't push Willock, does Willock head the ball in?
No.
I'll give up.
I think he's misjudged
the way that he's jumping. I don't think he's meeting the ball initially.
But he's pushed him when he's in midair. There's nothing Willock can do. He's already taken off to head the ball.
Well, we'll just have to.
And he's pushed him. If his feet are planted,
I disagree. That's fine. You think that? I think differently. That's fine. That's when we're talking about these subjective decisions. This is where the subjective part of it comes into it. I don't think that A led to B in that regard. I think it was a goal. I think the goal should have stood, but I don't think just because if you rule the goal out for whatever reason, I don't think that necessarily means it's a penalty afterwards. That's my subjective decision. Fine that you disagree. That is just where I stand on this.
Yeah, I can't get on with that. I'm sorry. I can't.
I think you both arseholes.
I'm definitely an arsehole. I'm definitely an arsehole out there. Oh, Chris. No, I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying, but the view of it and stuff, I think if he doesn't push him, he gets the ball, or he nods it in, or he makes contact.
I think it's a goal and a penalty, and I think Newcastle should have had two goals.
And a red card, and a handball.
Yes. Newcastle should have been two goals up after that incident.
Shall we draw a line under the VAR?
Well, as long as it's not an offside. As long as it's not like one of those offside lines, because they annoy me very much as well.
Just from Chris's armpit?
Yeah, we can draw a line.
Just an armpit
but
line.
Just so you know, my head is leaning slightly over that line, Taylor. So, yeah.
Fair enough.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Okay, so we had a few changes in the starting 11, and Sven Botman and Fabian Scher returned to the back. I thought Botman had a good game. I thought he played really well, Chris. He looked pretty composed, and he had a couple of chances at goal as well, and it was good to see him and Scher back together again.
Yeah, it seemed that, I mean, obviously he was rotating the centre-backs, but at least for the first 5 minutes, it seemed like the plan was, having no Bruno or Shelvey, to have the centre-backs to play a lot of cross-field balls to try and switch play early. Ryan Fraser got a lot of the ball early on. And it sort of changed from that point. They weren't actually used as much going forward. I don't know whether that was because of the way Palace were playing and they disrupted that, or for whatever reason, Newcastle attacked in different ways and created opportunities because of that. So fair enough that they did change that way. But yes, I mean, Botman looked very dangerous from Newcastle attacking set pieces. I thought you can see what he can bring in the area in terms of nodding it back across to other players and creating things from that sense. I mean, I thought... I've done a piece sort of looking at the game and did a piece with Rasheen Thomas, which looked at the, although he sort of led it, but looking at the VAR instance. But then I did a piece actually looking at Newcastle United and where they are. And I mean, when Steve Bruce was in charge, I did a lot of pieces which sort of looked at basically that the underlying stats belied the actual reality of the results and what Newcastle fans were seeing and believing. And Newcastle, it felt unsustainable at the time, the way Newcastle were playing and the results that were coming from it. If you look at the underlying stats at the moment, and yes, we're only six games in, but two of those matches are against last season's top two, the underlying stats are completely different. Newcastle have the best attacking metrics in just about every aspect apart from goals since promotion back to the Premier League in 2017. They've actually averaged more shots on shots per game since 2013-14 in the top flight, and they've had more shots on target per match since they qualified for the Champions League in 2002-2003.
Wow.
Possession is also up massively, and that includes playing against, there probably would be more than 50% if they hadn't played against Liverpool and Manchester City by this stage. So you can see the way Newcastle are evolving. And on Saturday, they did that without the three arguably most important players in attack in Bruno, Saint-Maximin and Wilson. Also no Shelvey, as we've already said. So the metrics suggest Newcastle are heading in the right direction. Now, some people have commented saying that contributes to how they feel and what they've seen. Other people have commented in the bottom saying, yeah, but Newcastle aren't winning matches, they're not scoring goals. And I fully appreciate that. This is all theoretical at the moment, but the direction of travel Newcastle are going in, you bring those three best players back into the team, and I think Newcastle win on Saturday. And so I am encouraged by what I've seen so far. They've only got one win in six. They haven't won since the opening day, but they've also only lost once. And I think that Howe will like the way that Newcastle are moving, the direction they're heading in, give Alexander Isak more time to train with the team, and I think Newcastle are heading in the right direction.
Yeah, the attacking side of things are a lot better. However, we can't afford to be profligate given the creativity problems that we have at the minute. George and Alexander Isak, probably the most guilty of that, going through one-on-one with Guaita. But it's one of those where he's almost had too much time to think about what to do, isn't it?
Yeah, and you know, we were all very, very enthusiastic and excited after the impact he made at Anfield, but it was a very different kind of game. And yeah, it did feel like you're sort of watching him bear down on goal, too much time to sort of think about it. And he tried to sort of do that little dinky finish, which would have looked great if it had worked, but just blast it.
I didn't hear John Anderson's comment.
Ah, the fucking head
I'm sure it was something along that. And it then turned out to be a very difficult afternoon for him, actually. I mean, but not helped by the fact that he saw such little of the ball. And that was something that Eddie Howe talked about afterwards, referenced afterwards. Newcastle have got a different kind of player and they've got to find a different way of making the most of him. I thought there were actually some very good performances. I thought Almiron, yet again, absolutely ran himself into the ground.
Never stopped, did he?
And he just couldn't give any more. Chris is pulling faces. But
he always does.
But I thought he was good. And I know that it'll be the same criticism about the final ball, but actually I thought his final ball was actually, I thought there was better there. It was just people weren't, you know, on the end of it. I know you can look at that two ways. I thought Jolinton was exceptional again, and Trippier's set pieces still cause problems. I think there's a lot there to be. I mean, my main takeaway, this is slightly changing the question or whatever, but I just thought Newcastle looked knackered by the end of it.
Yes, yeah.
You know, they're playing with such intensity. They put so much work in at Anfield. They are still without those really important three players, attacking players, and I thought they were tired. I was worried about that before the game. My hope was that, you know, against a decent team, that they would get the win, and that would then give them, you know, give the points total look far more, I think, reflective of the efforts put in this season, mm-hmm. and then give them time to regroup. And it just didn't quite happen. I thought Newcastle kind of ran out of gas, but I don't blame them for that. I understand it.
Yeah, it's 7 points from six games, isn't it, Chris? And we have played two of the best teams in Europe. You have to remember that when you look at that points total. But it is ever so slightly disappointing when you look at the games that Newcastle probably should have came away with victories.
Yeah, it feels like Newcastle haven't had the points return for the performances that they've put in. But the priority going into the summer was to improve Newcastle in attack and output. They managed to finally go and break the transfer record to bring in Alexander Isak, but they haven't addressed the issue in the wide positions and lose it. Part of it was because they're without their three best players, as I've already mentioned. But you take that out and suddenly the creativity for the dominance Newcastle had in terms of territory, in terms of opportunities to get the ball in the box, I still think that final ball was lacking. I agree with you that Almiron ran himself into the ground again, but he had one real opportunity where he absolutely flashed an effort across goal when I think he should have at least hit the target. And I also think there were several times where his final ball wasn't good enough. That wasn't only Almiron, almost the entire team.
Hit the post as well, didn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, but that was a deflected. Well. There was a deflected shot from the edge of the area. But yeah, he did. But you have the likes of Fraser. I didn't think he got in the game enough after the first 10 minutes. He wasn't offering enough in that capacity. Joe Willock until the final 15 minutes when he had the two efforts. I will caveat Joe Willock with the fact that he's played almost every minute this season, so he's probably knackered. But he wasn't really in the game. Joe Linton, I thought, had a very good first half. Then I thought he maybe his influence waned a little bit. I agree that fatigue probably is taking charge with Newcastle, and I also think that the Isak thing was big. He hasn't trained with the team. I said before the match, I thought it was going to be an interesting one to see how he would cope against a defence who was likely to sit a little bit deeper. Against Liverpool, there was a high line, Newcastle could play him in behind. Didn't really get that opportunity. The one real chance, I know he had three shots, but the one real opportunity he got was actually self-created from his own pressing, winning the ball from Anderson. In terms of that effort, he likes that dink finish as Alan Shearer mentioned in his piece last week, but I almost felt he needed to give himself a bit of an angle. He almost ran too straight.
Yeah, he was too straight, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Just take a touch.
But beyond that, and that seemed to drain his confidence a little bit, but he only had 20 touches. Newcastle didn't get him in the game enough. Second half, when they did get him, he put a couple of very nice balls, one that almost got through to Willock. But actually, Elliot Anderson and Jacob Murphy, They came on the 70th minute together. Elliot Anderson had 22 touches, two more than Isak, and Murphy had 19. So that shows you how little Newcastle managed to get him into the game, and he couldn't quite get himself into the game. I think that will come in time as he trains more, as the players get used to his runs, he gets used to what they want to bring. But that's where, for all of their positive attacking intent, I didn't think the parts quite added up on Saturday.
And I think the other thing to point out, as you know, Chris mentions there, who came on. I love the fact, by the way, that Elliot Anderson's
at
the club and is getting game time. He just looks so confident. Really good to see that. Jordi Maradona, as the corner was singing, which was nice. Not to put any pressure on him, but you just have to look at that bench on Saturday. I mean, I think that gives some indication of where Newcastle are in terms of their progress. There's not a lot on that bench to change a game. And
three fullbacks.
Yeah, it would look a bit different. It would look a bit different if those three players are back, granted. But, and this is not a criticism, it's just, you know, Newcastle can't do absolutely everything all in one go in terms of transfers. They've done incredible business over two windows, £200 million. And I think, you know, you put those three players back amongst the first 11 or in the squad, and Newcastle's first 11 looks really good. It looks very solid. There's a great spine there. There is creativity, perhaps not enough, but there is creativity and there are goals. I think once you're beyond that, that is the concern, that Newcastle don't yet have the resources to change games. So they're going to be very reliant on those first 11, first 12, first 13 players. So we've got to hope that they stay fit for as much as possible.
Absolutely. And West Ham away next, and a slightly friendlier look in September. It feels like we've been playing two or three games a week for the last sort of 3 weeks. The games have really piled up, haven't they? But it's quite welcome given the situation with regard to injuries Chris. And hopefully,
I was going to say, it's slightly annoying that Newcastle have played City and Liverpool, who now go into Champions League matches. I mean, that's sort of a bit frustrating.
Yeah.
But albeit that West Ham are in Europe. But yeah, I mean, I think you can just tell that they're longing to get onto the training ground, have a couple of days off, and then start again and take a breath.
Absolutely. And as far as injuries go, Chris, were we expecting to see anybody back this week?
I asked Eddie Howe about this after the game, and he didn't give a full time frame, but he said that he hopes that Wilson, Sam Maximan, and Bruno will be back together. At some stage. He didn't say it would necessarily be together. From our understanding of where they are fitness-wise, I think there's a decent chance that Bruno and or Alan Saint-Maximin could be back for West Ham. I think Wilson might be the weekend after, or possibly the weekend after that. I don't think he's likely to be back. But I would, at this stage, it's looking hopeful that at least one of the other two will be back, if not both.
Lovely stuff. Right then, chaps, let's move on. Just before we do, I'd like to say that VAR decision was a fucking joke, and it should have been a penalty as well if it wasn't, Chris. So that's enough of that.
Two goals for Newcastle.
Two goals, a red card, a handball, sending off, a ban, points deduction for everyone except us, and especially for Lee Mason. Anyway, let's move on. You can subscribe to The Athletic at a price of just £1 a month for the first 6 months right now. To claim that offer, go to theathletic.com/NewcastlePod and get access to all of our great writing, as well as ad-free versions of The Athletic's podcasts. That's theathletic.com/NewcastlePod. Sign up now.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Right then, George, as we said at the top of the show, you were at the ladies' game. I presume you were there in a tuxedo with a little bow tie, were you? You pulled up in your Aston Martin.
I did, yeah, I did. So glad you could drop in. I can do all the...
that was good. You can do all of
no,
them.
I can't.
Do Roger Daltrey.
Roger Daltrey, he's the lead singer of the...
Roger Daltrey, he's the lead singer, of the Who. No. Timothy Dalton.
Oh, dear. I've talked about this before. I watched all of the James Bond films during lockdown. I took it upon myself to watch them all in order, and I thought that would be...
You are so Alan Partridge.
I know. I thought that would be...
It's not even funny how Alan Partridge
I thought that would be great, but... and, you know, the early Sean Connery ones, of course, are brilliant. The early Roger Moore ones are brilliant.
Yeah.
It does get a big bog down when you get to Timothy Dalton, and some of the later Pierce Brosnan ones are not good. But anyway, there you go. Slight digression.
You're getting Bond wrong. So, George, you mentioned you were at the women's game. They suffered their first defeat of the season. Becky Langley was incandescent with rage, apparently. Is that right?
She was, yeah. So
it's not the only one.
They were playing. No, anger is an energy this weekend. I think it's fair to say that. They were 2-0 up and playing very well. There was a dreadful penalty decision that went against them at 2-1. Very difficult to see. One of the Newcastle players kind of had arms around a whole player. But, I mean, it's the kind of thing that if you give that decision, you're giving about 100 every single game. So Becky was furious at half-time, sort of approached the referee, came up on the pitch. Anyway, they were 2-0 up. They're also 3-2 up, and they've ended up losing 4-3. So, as she said afterwards, you know, we've lost that game at both ends of the pitch. But it was a very strange afternoon of decisions, and so I've got sympathy with her. I was going to try and put a couple of minutes of her talking on the podcast, but she was a little bit too angry for that. But we will do that. We will do that next time. But overall, it was. I mean, it's difficult to say this. She won't like me saying this, I'm sure. But it was a really good game. It was a good occasion. There were 2,000 people there this week.
That's great, though.
Which was fantastic. Fabulous atmosphere. And Amanda Staveley was there. Darren Eales, the new CEO, was there. As I mentioned, Steve Harper was there. All watching, all taking part, and I was with Amanda and Darren Hills for some of it, and they're just so enthused about the women's team and what they can do to help. It's just very, 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 very encouraging. I've bought myself a season ticket for the women because I mean it's 30 quid a season.
Fantastic.
You can't go wrong for that, and it's just a great atmosphere. And at the end of it, after all that sort of disappointment, the team come over to the fans, they do selfies, they have pictures taken, they do autographs, they chat with people. It's a brilliant atmosphere. They play good stuff. They're trying really hard, and they'll get better and they'll bounce back. And I would encourage it for everybody, particularly, I mean, I don't have kids, so maybe I'm misspeaking, but there are a lot of families there. It feels like a great way to get kids involved, particularly girls, I would, you know, for obvious reasons, to get them involved in watching football, hopefully taking part in football as well, getting inspired to do that. And, you know, it's relatively cheap compared to the men's game. So I loved it. I'm going to be as regular as I can be this season, and I want to get Becky on more.
It's very encouraging, Chris, isn't it, to see so many people now taking an interest in the women's game. And, of course, they've been brought into the club officially now, and hopefully it's going to give them the boost to push on over the forthcoming seasons.
Definitely, and it was good that finally fixture scheduling has worked in their favour in terms of not at the same time as the men's team were playing.
Yeah.
That is good. People, I'm sure there would have been more the week before in earlier weeks if they'd been able to, but Newcastle United men's were playing, and therefore a lot of people would have wanted to watch that. Having the opportunity to watch both is wonderful, or either or whatever it is that you prefer. Hopefully there'll be some women or even men growing up, young lads growing up, who will maybe want to watch the women's even ahead of the men's. They might have, that might be more of their feel if they go along to a game at Kingston Park. That might be something that grabs them. No, I'm gonna go with George at some point in the course of the next few weeks.
I'd like to get along as well.
Yeah, and it's just,
I think I'd like to go to a game.
Let's have a pot on the time afternoon out. But it's great. It feels like, I mean, this may sound stupid or patronising, I really don't want it to do. It feels like you're watching Newcastle United, and it's great. And finally, they are,
that's good,
you know, officially part of the club. It feels like an extension of us, of you, of me and all that, and which is great. I properly invested in that match. I was jumping up and down. with both fury and excitement. It was great. You can have a drink. It's, yeah, as I say, it's a great place.
Oh yeah, then, of course. And you can have a pint in view of the pitch, can't you? Because they treat you like a grown up.
It's really good. It's really good fun. And yeah, they're playing at Borough this midweek. So good luck. Good luck, lasses, and hope they bounce back.
Absolutely, and there is a clamour for tickets for the men's games at the minute, and a lot of people are missing out on getting to go to those games. So if you have a free afternoon and you want to go and see a Newcastle United team play, no better place to go than go and watch the ladies' team. Right then, more exciting St James's Park news. Sam Fender has announced that he's going to be doing a massive stadium gig at St James's Park on the 9th of June 2023. This was announced... And it was one of the worst kept secrets in show business, wasn't it? As he appeared on the pitch on the day that Alexander Isak signed for Newcastle, Sam Fender was there with his guitar and his saxophone player as well. And then subsequently the news has came out that the gig is going to happen on the 9th of June, the most Geordie of all the days, George. And it's great to see a local lad doing well. And I'm sure it's going to be a brilliant occasion.
Yeah, there was that lovely moment at halftime on Saturday when War Flags put banners up across the other end of the pitch. And Sam Fender and his band were there. And Johnny Blueheart, I think he is.
The loudest saxophone in the world. That was so loud.
Actually,
it was brilliant, though.
I mean, for future matches, I wish that had been done just before kickoff, because it was hairs standing up on the back of their neck. With that noise, it was just absolutely beautiful. You can imagine all the lights off. Not that I'm telling him what he should do in a year's time, but all the lights off at St James's Park, just that blasting out. And then anyway, he's a phenomenon, Sam Fender. He's brilliant. Geordie Springsteen, wish him nothing but the best. And that is going to be, I'm definitely going to try and go. Yeah, can't wait for that.
You fancy that, Chris? We fancy a pod on the time day out?
I'd very much fancy that. It turns out Eddie Howe actually likes Sam Fender as well. He admitted this in his press conference on Friday. Not quite as much as Aha. Eddie Howe is a very dedicated Aha fan, and he did
when he loves his 80s synth pop.
Yeah, he was asked again about this on Friday, and he's such a big Aha fan. He was going to be going to a gig earlier this summer, which was cancelled because I think one of the singers was ill. And it turns out that Aha have cancelled about 4 gigs in 30 years, and the one that Eddie Howe was going to go to was cancelled, despite him being an absolutely huge Aha fan. But yeah, if Eddie Howe and the team...
You fancied that gig as well, didn't you, Chris?
There was an idea from someone in our office that maybe I should go along to the gig and see how Eddie Howe was bopping along, which I was very much against. So thankfully, I was quite happy the gig gig was cancelled. So
you don't. I'll do this job. Give me your job. I'll go and watch Aha with Eddie Howe.
Wasn't necessarily that Eddie Howe would know, but it was almost like spying on Eddie Howe from the back of it.
Just stand behind him and watch him. With like a newspaper with eye holes cut out of it.
What have we learned from watching Eddie Howe dance along to Take On Me?
I think he probably prefers Sun Always Shines on TV to Take On Me. He's more of a purist.
Cry Wolf. That's
a great tune. Morten Harkin. Fantastic. He was a handsome and slender man as well.
Very
wasn't
handsome, very slender. Yeah, properly handsome. Yeah,
cheekbones you could slice cheese on.
Yeah.
So Sam Fender, 9th of June. Tickets on sale on Friday and the pre-sale on Wednesday, which I've got myself signed up for. Let's see if we can get into that one. It'll be a great occasion. Also, just before we finish, we've got to say congratulations to Alan St Maximin for winning Goal of the Month on Match of the Day. His strike against Wolves. The volley as the ball drops out of the sky. Was it a shinner, Chris?
The most perfect shinner you've ever seen. But Trippier was nominated as well, wasn't he? For his free kick, I think, wasn't he?
He was, yeah. Well, why wasn't Fabian Schär nominated?
Because it was exactly the same as the one. Yeah, it was exactly the same as the one he'd done before. It's like, you can't give it twice.
Surely, you've got to give him some kind of award for that. Which players ever scored the same goal, exact same goal twice?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I can't think of anyone.
That's good. Yeah, he should have. Yeah.
Alan might have done it. Alan scored so many that he must have scored the same one twice.
Yeah.
Yeah, good goals though. Could do with a few more of those, couldn't we?
Very good. Yeah, I wonder how many VAR are going to get rid of over the years. I wonder if, how many Goal of the Month we're going to lose to stupid...
Just allow them 3 weeks later when they're being nominated for Goal of the Month.
Yeah, you're not having that. Take it back. Anyway, chaps, that's it. Anything else to add before we close things up for the day?
Well, do we need to make our peace?
No, because we never fell out. It's a disagreement. These things happen. We're all big boys. We know what this is all about. We don't have to agree on everything. The world would be a boring place, wouldn't it, Chris? If we agreed on everything,
it would be. And we all agreed that I was right, so we don't need to have this conversation.
No, you are wrong, but that's not
Chris,
the point.
You were born wrong. Go and squirt some deodorant in your own face again.
Oh, my word. Right. Thank you very much, chaps. It's been, I was going to say fun, but it's been interesting.
It's been therapy. That's what it's been. It's been therapy. And there's nothing wrong with that.
It's been very, very real. Thanks a lot for listening out there. Of course, theathletic.com/Newcastle pod for access to all of our great writing, as well as ad-free versions of the Athletics podcast at just £1 a month for the first 6 months. And if that's not value, then I don't know what is. Thank you very much for listening. We'll be back very soon from myself, George, and Chris, and everyone at Pod on the Tyne. Thanks a lot. Take care. Bye-bye. James fucking Bond, honestly. Should have gone to Specsavers.
I admire your luck, Mr.
Culkin. Yeah, the Incredible Culkin.
You have a nasty habit of surviving.
I've never said that.
Do you lose as gracefully as you win?
Yeah, I've got a hangover, actually.
My name is Pussy Galore.
What? Why are you talking to me? I'm not ready to engage with anything.
That's not funny, 007.
I'm glad that's done with.
The Athletic.